Before I begin, I would like to express my thanks to Cole Durham, especially, and his associates for having me here in this wonderful event at Brigham Young University, also giving me this opportunity to address such a distinguished audience. So thanks a lot. My job today is, I think, to make a presentation on the current situation in Turkey concerning the freedom of religion. I would like to begin by citing a conclusion regarding the state of religious freedom in Turkey, which is mentioned in the State Department annual report on international religious freedom in the United States. It says, Turkish constitution restricts religious freedom. It quite correctly, the report says also that there are certain clauses in the Turkish constitution and other rules, other laws, that conform with the standards of contemporary understanding of religious freedom, but on the grounds that religious freedom should be restricted for the purpose of the protection of a secular republic, this constitutional framework puts heavy restrictions, on the other hand, on religious freedom. So I think this conclusion is correct, but I think we have to elaborate on this conclusion in a further detail. So what I will try to do in this presentation is to maybe giving some historical background information about Turkey's about the relationship between the state and religion in Turkey. But I would like to express the situation in at two levels. At one level, I would like to answer the question, is there a religious establishment favored by the Turkish state in Turkey? An immediate answer might be, you might expect an immediate answer would be no, because Turkey declares itself as a secular or a republic which is based on the principle of laicism, which is the exact term used in the constitutional framework. But I think this answer, saying that there is no established religion in Turkey, is in a way mistaken. I would like to dwell on this a bit further later on. The second level of my presentation will focus on the free exercise of religious belief in social and public life. I mean, what is the situation in Turkey in terms of this free exercise? As for the established religion question, I think we have to bear in mind the relationship between state and religion in the Ottoman past, which Turkey is certainly a heir to that historical legacy. During the Ottoman Empire, many of you might know that the Ottoman state used Islam as a kind of legitimizing ideology, but it was not exactly a state based on Islamic legal principles. The Ottoman state was a state which was based on certain principles which actually derived from the Turkic nomadic tribal past, which goes back to the ancient Turkish traditions before Turks converted to Islam in 7th century. So according to, in contradiction to many established ideas that Ottoman state was governed by Islamic law, this was not in fact true. Islam has only been a justifying or a legitimizing ideology, and Sharia is permitted only in the field of private law and for the Muslims. So The Ottoman Empire was a multi-religious empire which favored the existence of different religious groups with their own practices in religion and private law, spheres of private law, like family, marriage, law of obligations, commerce, etc. But in public law, in constitutional establishment of religious affairs, the Ottoman state actually controlled religion through the office of Sheikhul Islam, which is the highest office. You might somewhat make a resemblance between the position of the Patriarchate in the Byzantine Empire. The Patriarchate to the emperor is the Sheikhul Islam to the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire. And this institution is abolished in 1924 after the foundation of the Republic. And simultaneously with the abolishment of this Islamic religious institution, the Republic instituted a new institution, which is now called General Directorate of Religious Affairs. And this is a branch of central administration of the state, and it's attached to the office of the Prime Minister. So it doesn't even have a legal personality of its own, and it doesn't have a separate existence outside the general legal personality of the state. So it's not autonomous. It is attached to the office of the Prime Minister. And what does this institution, I mean this General Directorate of Religious Affairs, do? It deals with the problems or questions of Muslim population in Turkey. And at this point, I have to open a parenthesis and mention that the vast majority of Turkish society is are Muslims, as many of you know. But we also have Christian minorities or non-Muslim minorities, not only Christian, but Jews as well. But they are very few, and their percentage is probably amount to 1%, maybe less. This is a result of history, basically, because before 1923, before the establishment of the Republic, approximately a third of Anatolian population was Christian. But after the establishment of the Republic, as a result of a national war of independence, an agreement between Greece and Turkey was signed to exchange populations. So Muslims in Greece came to Anatolia, and Orthodox Christians in Turkey were sent to Greece. And ironically, this included deportation of some Arabics and ethnic Turks, actually, to Greece because they were Orthodox. So this contributed to the development of a homogeneous Muslim population in Anatolia with very small non-Muslim minorities, and their religious rights to form religious organizations and religious practices, including religious education and schools, etc., are under the protection of an international treaty which protects non-Muslim minorities as regulated between articles, I think, 37 to 45, and this is the minority protection agreement that Turkey is trying to proceed with. But having said this, Turkey also, hitherto existing governments have interpreted the clauses that protect minority, non-Muslim minority rights in Lausanne Treaty in a very narrow sense, trying to establish some conformity with the practice of the way the Greece treats non-Orthodox Turks in Western Thrace. So non-Muslim minorities have faced several very serious problems. Although their size is very small, they actually have faced problems, most importantly pertaining to the rights to property of certain ancient foundations which have been established in the Ottoman past. And a law has passed by the parliament this year, 2008, a new law for the foundations, and this hopefully will provide a new framework which will give back the property rights of non-Muslim minority foundations, basically Christian, Greek, and Armenian foundations who have suffered from some nationalistic practices in the past. But the major problem Turkey is facing today in the field of freedom of religion and belief is concerns the difference within the Muslim population itself. Because when you look from a distance to Turkish society, as a result of a series of developments which I tried to summarize very briefly, you might regard Turkey as a homogeneous society of predominantly Muslim society, but Muslim population in Turkey has its own differences within itself. We have, first of all, a cleavage, a differentiation at least, which causes some frictions from time to time between Sunni Muslims and Alawi groups. And Alawis are sometimes described as Anatolian Shiites, but that has some truth in it, but it's not true in the whole sense of the term, because they are not Shiites, in fact. They are only followers of Ali, the groom to Muhammad, the prophet. But their uniqueness come from their interesting synthesis of shamanistic traditions of ancient Turkic tribes with Islamic principles and practices. So they don't go to mosque, for example, and they don't fast during the Ramadan. They have on their own fasting practices, etc. And Diyanet, the General Directorate of Religious Affairs, that state administrative institution, I think from my perspective, and this is the perspective shared by many Alevis as well, discriminates against these groups, saying like the way they get together, I mean the Alevi groups, they get together in a place called Cemevi, which is not Cami, not the mosque. They don't go to mosque, but they go to other to other places. And the General Directorate of Religious Affairs, this office of the Prime Minister, says the place where the Alevis gather to practice their belief is not a place for religion. So it cannot benefit from certain governmental subsidies or reductions in, like, payments in electricity, water, etc., because they are not regarded as religious places. And this was also a judgment made by this Director General of Religious Affairs for the churches in Turkey and synagogues in Turkey as well. But a court decision has established the verdict that churches and synagogues are religious places, so they have to be treated as religious places proper, so they have to be exempt from certain payments, or they have to be they could benefit from certain governmental subsidies, etc. So this is a very established verdict by the Turkish Council of State. And it accepts that churches and synagogues are religious places, but not places where Alevis practice their own belief. They are still not religious places. So this establishment, which I refer to as the General Director of Religious Affairs in Turkey discriminates against the Alevi groups in favor of Sunni groups regarding this issue, which clearly tells us something about how the state sees religion. I mean, this means that Turkey is a secular country or a country which is established on the principle of laicism, but it also has an established understanding of religion. And where does this come from? Let me explain this in a bit more detail, because this will help me explain another distinction or another cleavage now existing in Turkish society. And this is not the cleavage between Sunnis and Alevis, but it's a cleavage within the Sunni population itself, again, regarding the relationship between state and religion. The founding father of the Turkish Republic, maybe most of you have heard his name, Atatürk, has made several statements concerning his understanding of Islam in different at different occasions in Turkish history. And we can distinguish between Atatürk's views on Islam in the 1920s and Atatürk's views on Islam in the 1930s. In the 1920s, Atatürk was saying, and this was the days of the national struggle for independence. In those days, Atatürk was, for example, while he was addressing the General Assembly in Ankara, he was saying that the audience here does not only consist in Turks, Kurds, Circassians, Bosnians, etc., etc. They might be different in ethnic background, but all of them are all of them belong to certain elements which make up the whole community of Islam. So Islam is referred to by Atatürk in the 1920s as a sort of kind of an ideological cement that glues together different ethnic groups in society. Accordingly, after the establishment of the Republic, a new constitution was made in 1924, and this constitution included an article which says the official religion of Republic is the religion of Islam. And this was the clause which established clearly a state religion in the Turkish Republic. But in 1928, this clause is abolished, let me say, and in 1937, the principle of laicism, I know the difference between laicite and laicism, and the Turkish principle is not laicite, it's laicism, and that's probably what makes Turkey somewhat different from other republics, like the French one, for example, which they borrowed this term. Anyway, in 1937, this after the abolishment of the clause on the state religion, in 1937, the clause which says Turkey is a republic based on the principle of laicism is instituted within the constitution itself. And this continued in the constitution of 1961 and in the constitution of 1982. In the present constitution, we have a difference when we compare the previous constitutions with the present one pertaining to the constitutional status of the General Director of Religious Affairs. I'm not sure if I'm being systematic enough, but in this present constitution, this General Director of Religious Affairs was described as an institution which has the duty to establish and sustain national integrity and solidarity. So I think this clearly says something about the hidden side of the relations between state and religion in Turkey. Because from a secularist perspective, there shall be no constitutional or legal principles favoring a particular religion. But here in practice and in law, in legal terms, we have an institution which interprets Islam from a Sunni perspective in accordance with a certain worldview and tries to impose this view on the Alawi population as well through compulsory religious education courses in primary and secondary schools. So there's a certain interpretation of Islam which is challenged or opposed by not only by Alawi groups but certain Muslim groups as well. I have to mention another legal dimension. This Diyanet, the Directorate of Religious Affairs, is regulated in Article 136 of the present constitution. But there is another law, the law of political parties, and Article 89 of that law says no political party can have a program which debates or which tries to open a debate or aims at changing the constitutional status of the General Directorate of Religious Affairs. This cannot be existent in any program of any political party. So, in fact, we have this principle of laicism in the second article of the Constitution, and the fourth article of the Constitution says the second article cannot be amended, but here the Article 136 that regulates the General Directorate of Religious Affairs cannot also be amended, because any group that will amend this article will form a political party and a program. So this means that you are favoring or you are proposing to change or even abolish this state religion system. This means that you are a party against the secularist foundations of the Republic, so you will be closed, which in fact happened in the case of the ruling Justice and Development Party. But the case brought into the Constitutional Court of Turkey very recently for the closure of the ruling Justice and Development Party was not based on the allegation that they want to abolish the General Directorate of Religious Affairs, but they wanted to allow for girls in universities to wear their headscarves. So this is also another interesting point we have for the religion and state religions relations in Turkey. Wearing headscarves in universities, according to the Constitutional Court and according to the Council of State decisions in Turkey, is an action against the secular foundations of the Republic. So if you want to go to a university in Turkey and if you're a woman, then you cannot wear a headscarf. And if you wear one, this means that legally you are expressed very explicitly a carrier or a bearer of an anti-secularist ideology, most probably an Islamic fundamentalist type of political agent. And this interpretation, unfortunately, was found quite legal by the European Court of Human Rights. I think that decision is very critical, and it has to be scrutinized more closely and criticized on certain grounds. Maybe I think it's time for my conclusion. Before I conclude, I have to say one more thing about, I think I missed that point, Atatürk's views about Islam in the 1930s after the acceptance of this principle of secularism. The founding father of the Turkish Republic and his followers were very clearly positivists in the 19th century sense of the term, in the August Kantian sense. So I will just quote one of his sayings. He once said that the only guide in life is science, which is positive science. So the whole social and political organization in Turkish society, including education, etc., everything, must be based on positive scientific foundations, echoing somewhat a Turkish version of Saint-Simon and Auguste Comte, maybe. And this prevails, not only in Supreme Court or Constitutional Court or High Court decisions, but it also prevails in a very small but considerably quite important section of Turkish society, a very urbanized, well-educated, and they don't vote for the ruling Justice and Development Party. They vote for the Republican People's Party, basically. The research shows us that. So this is the other cleavage within the Muslim, Sunni Muslim population, that we have diehard secularists on the one hand, following Atatürk's guidance, saying that the only true guide in life is positive science, and we have other devout and practicing Sunni population. So this is also another cleavage we have in Turkish society. From the perspective of human rights analysis, I would like to conclude by a reference to Malcolm Evans. He described the development of freedom of religion in three historical stages. The first stage was cuius religio, which means separation of, you know, I mean, I don't have to describe that. The second phase is the minority protection model, and the third phase is the human rights model. I think Turkey is still has its feet on the ground of minority protection model and tries to transit to the human rights model of religious freedom. I hope this transition will complete as the reform process continues for the full membership of the European Union. But we have to know that this is still the minority protection model, and which it doesn't fit into the contemporary standards and requirements of religious freedom. Thank you.